is our interview with Mr. Charles Grace. First of all, were you enlisted, or did you enlist, or were you drafted into the Army?
Let me speak a little bit louder.
Were you drafted, or did you enlist into the Army?
Well, I would have been drafted. I went in September, and my number would have been called in about in February. That's one only time in my life I think I could use the pull. In other words, Governor Sleeper was governor of Michigan at that time, and Major Duff was from St. Clair, and I met him in St. Clair, or met him in Lansing a few months before I went in. And I talked to Mr. Duff, and Mr. Duff took me over and introduced me to Colonel Bursey the next morning, and Bursey wanted to enlist me right then, see. But I went back, and my mother was opposed to it, and so I held out for a short time. But when I could see if I was going to get, I would be called in anyway in February, I went in September.
How did you feel about enlisting in the Army?
Hmm?
How did you feel about enlisting in the Army?
Well, any good American should do that when our country's at war. I don't like the Army, between you and I. It's a different life than I'd ever want to live. And on the way back from Russia, there's quite a few boys that I knew very well, and some of them said they were going to re-enlist. And I said, you can have it, see. But I think at a time of war, you should do it. I mean, the country we live in, you just can't beat it. The part I always can't understand about a war is countries get at war, and then eventually they have to sit around the table and discuss it anyway, see? So it's too bad they can't do that first, don't you know?
That's true. What was your training experience at Camp Custer like?
Hmm?
What was your training experience at Camp Custer like?
The training?
Yeah. What happened at Camp Custer?
Well, to be honest with you, they took us out on the officer next morning and just given that squad right and left, and I knew it better, I think, better than the lieutenant did. And so he stopped and started to talk to me. And the captain came around and said, why aren't you drilling him? And he said, well, he knows it better than I. And so he said, well, I'll take him and you take these. So I got a chance to talk to Captain Taylor. He was transferred from the company later. He was a professor at Madison, Wisconsin. And but he got talking to me, and he asked me what I had done. And I told him I'd been in the food line since I was about 13 years old, and so on. And I was 27 and better when I went in the Army. So he said, you're going in the kitchen tomorrow morning. And he said, we've got a civilian cook there, and he said, I'll talk to him. Well, in other words, in a very few days, I was appointed acting sergeant. And a few days after that, I was detailed as a sergeant. See? But Captain Taylor was too big a man for a line company, and they just switched the captains and sent the captain from the headquarters over to our company, and he went to headquarters. But that's all I did ever, all the time I was in the Army, pretty near, just feed men, look after and feed men, see. But it calls, you don't realize, I sometimes wonder myself now, the ration at that time was about 49 to 51 cents a month. I mean, it figured every month, see. And it was figured on 14 different items, like potatoes and meat and so on, you see what I mean? A certain quantity, like 14 ounces of potatoes and so on. Well, I studied that ration pretty careful, and I could see that if I watched the meat, I wouldn't have to worry much about the other, because the meat would run about 50% of the ration, see? So I watched that careful. For illustration, if I was going to give them chops, I'd buy a half pound per man. And if it's roast beef, I'd only use buy a third of a pound per man, see. And so by studying that ration, it made it quite easy because I didn't run a lot of money ahead each month, and I didn't intend to because the government paid so much per feed a man. But it made it much easier for me after I went to work on that ration and figured it out pretty careful. You know?
Okay. What did you think your orders would be after you finished training?
What?
What did you think your orders would be after you finished training?
At Custer?
After Custer.
After I left Custer?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, when I was 19, to be honest, I went to work. I went in a partnership right here in this town. And this man and he and I went in, he was 38. It was a good combination because he might be slowing up while I'd be coming, don't you know? But Joe was just too lenient on credit, see? And he sold his home and I had saved money from $1 or $2 a week for a long while, don't you know what I mean? And we put it in the grocery. But I got away from it and I went to Detroit. And I knew I wasn't cut out for, didn't think I was cut out for a salesman, but I did want to know that how to use a salesman if I ever had a business of my own. And I thought, well, I don't think I can work for a better firm than H.J. Hines if I can get the job. And I talked to Taylor, and after I talked to him more 15, 20 minutes, he said, well, he said, Grace, there's only 3 things against you. I said, may I ask what they are? And he said, sure. He said, you're short, no experience, and you look young. He said, you may be 21, but you don't look it. And so I was just about ready to pick up my hat. And he said, I'll tell you. He said, you come back in the morning, will you? I said, all right. And I went back the next morning. He had a contract made out. He says, read it through, and he says, if it's satisfactory, sign it, and you're hired. And I was with H.J. Hines from that time on until I went in the service. And when I came out, why, Taylor wanted me to come back with him, but I didn't want to, because I wanted to get a trade, and I had a good taste of it, and I wanted the pastry end of it. That's what I wanted, and I got it. See, I went to work for the Bakerite people, and there happened to be a man was with the Bakerite at that time, Mr. Nathan, who was Jewish. But what he didn't know about pastry, and he was nice about explaining it to you too, you know. And in a 2-3 years that I was with him, a couple of years, till I went in business, I knew the pastry end from A to Z then. And to be honest, the truth about it, you have to make a good loaf of bread in the bakery business, I mean, if you want to succeed. But that it's a pastry end that where your money is, see. And so the more that you can sell, why, as for, and when we were in Detroit on that, and especially among those apartments, we had customers who was in the store 3 times, come to buy a few rolls in the morning for their breakfast and back at noon and again at night, don't you know?
Yeah.
And but the pastry was the end of it. Where your money is, and if you want to make some money in the game, why make the merchant or sell the merchandise is where the margin of profit is better, don't you know?
Where did you think you would be going from Camp Custer?
Hmm?
Where did you think you'd be going after you finished Camp Custer, though?
When we went over?
Well, okay, you trained at Camp Custer. Where did you think you would be going after that?
When we left Camp Custer overseas.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a nice one. My oldest sister and Jean, I was keeping company with her then. I don't know how they did it, but they wanted me to tell, after we got overseas, where we thought we were going, see? And they had worked up a word, like for illustration, Siberia. And they had, like the first word of the second line, would be the S, see, and so on, and the fourth one, and I've just kind of forgotten. But anyway, I spent a Sunday afternoon in England trying to write a letter home, see, a few lines, see, and get those letters in, see. And but they figured it out, but it didn't work out that way. The reason I said that was when we arrived in England, they picked up our rifles, and see, and they gave us another rifle, and the bayonet was entirely different. The bayonet on the rifle that they issued to us, well, it reminded you of like a screwdriver compared only to me, the width of my, and the regular American bayonet would be twice my fingers in width, or maybe more. Mm-hmm. So I knew we weren't going to France, you know, and I figured that right away. But I did think we were going to Siberia, but we, instead of that, we went to northern Russia. Now, I'm glad we didn't go to Siberia, because the boys, American boys that did go there, were out there a lot longer than we were, see. Mm-hmm. Another 6 or 8 months, or maybe a year longer than we were.
Yeah. So, did they ever tell you that you would be going to northern Russia? Or
no, they don't tell you nothing in the army.
That's what everybody says. Silly girl. So you told your wife or your girlfriend that you would be going to Siberia then?
Yes, I wrote the letter home, see. And they figured it out from it. I don't know how I did it, but I did it. Maybe I missed some, I don't know. But they... my oldest sister and Jean were very, very close friends. And that's that. You know, did that solve that one?
Yeah. Let's see. Did you continue training in England? Did you continue training in England?
Oh, I thought we were going to England. When you left the States, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, most of the troops. I had heard in the past, most of them, that the convoys that went over went to England first, and then they were sent from there on to different places, see. Funny things, most all our moves, from the time we left Custer on a Sunday, and we arrived in England on a Sunday, and we left England to going out to Russia on a Sunday, and so on.
What did you know of Russia when you landed there? Did you know anything about Russia when you landed there?
I didn't know a thing about Russia, see. No. In fact, I had heard a lot of other little things about the Russian people. Now, the Russian people, I dealt with them, and I got told that they trusted me and I trusted them. And for illustration, if they came in and wanted to make an exchange, many times, I wouldn't even call an interpreter, Paragorchik, because I had seen their face several times, and I knew that they had vegetables, potatoes, or carrots, or something in that, and I'd ask them, in Russian, a fund, that's like a bushel in our, see, but the Russian, a fund is 36 pounds. And of course, a bushel in America is 60. But I'd ask them, skolko fund, see, and they'd tell me what brukko or whatever it was, and I knew then. And now, they were very anxious to make an exchange with us for this reason. What we had, they wanted to get rid of. And we needed it. And in return, what we could give them for illustration, like split peas or different things like that, why, they could hide that. Don't you know what I mean? And if the bullet did come in their section, why, different one told me that they hid it under a house or something of that kind, see? And of course, it would keep, see? It would dry and keep under there, as long as it was dry under there. Quite a life. I just would like to say here that though there was hardships in the army, I'll admit that, but nevertheless I've always been glad that I was in the Army and that I did go out to Russia, because I not only saw quite a little of England, I saw a little of France and a lot of Russia while I was out there, see. And that those three countries I probably would have never seen had I not been in the service, don't you know?
Did you know anything about Bolshevism at all?
Bolshevism,
when you first landed?
Didn't know anything about?
Bolshevism.
Bolshevism. I might say this, that I always think that the number of Bolsheviks that were there, if they'd wanted to, there wouldn't have been any come back, don't you know? We were so outnumbered, see. It was a terrible expedition for the American government to send out, see. 5,500, 6,000 combat troops to fight, I don't know how many, millions of them, maybe. Awful, terrible number. But though the casualties were high out there, between frostbites and killing and so on and so forth, about 20%, compared to in France it was only about 3%. So that, you know.
Did they give you any lectures or information about Bolshevism or why you were in Russia at all?
No. You see, I met quite a few American boys that had been at the front and back for one thing or another. I can think of his name will come to me. In other words, most every evening I would probably go to some Russian home. Now, I knew two Russians up there very, very well. And the reason I went to their homes was their father had been in the lumber business, and they had shipped lumber to England, see, and they spoke English. And I'd go to their home, and they'd often tell me where I might be able to make an exchange with stuff for something that I had, because it was all bartering, that's all the way you get it. And by going to those homes, why, I got quite well acquainted with them, and since they spoke English, I could come home spending a nice evening, you know, learning quite a bit about Russian people. Now, the Russian people, I personally feel, and I always will, that we would never have any trouble with, see. It's the Kremlin.
Mm-hmm.
That's the stick that sometimes happens in our own country, too.
Yeah, that's true. Why did you think you were in Russia? Why did you think you had been sent to Russia?
Well, you see, Russia was an ally of, you know, at the time, see. And I suppose maybe the Russians felt that in as much as they were foreign furnishings and soldiers and other parts, don't you know? I don't know. I suppose maybe they felt that there should have some Yanks be sent out there, don't you know?
Is that what you thought at the time?
Yeah.
Okay. What ship did you sail from Newcastle on?
Ship?
Yeah, what was the name of the boat?
Oh, gee. I don't think I can... I will say that they were Japanese boats that the English government had taken over. I don't remember the name.
Nagoya? Would that be it?
I think it was the moon, yeah.
Okay. Did a lot of the soldiers on the boat get the Spanish flu?
A lot of soldiers what?
Did they come down with the Spanish flu?
Oh. Hardly got in the Italian boat going out. In other words, we went out in a convoy, you know. Now, I don't know where those Italians went. There wasn't too many of them, I don't think. But they had been on the boat maybe a month before we got aboard, see. And, they passed on something. In other words, they all get in line at high noon, see.
Yeah.
And the one that pass on, when I go over the side, don't you know? And you could, I couldn't watch a lot of times, so you could see an awful lot of boys from Itagan that were more so than the Yanks. I don't wonder how many Yanks, but we had quite a few on the boat when we arrived, I know, in Archangel, the bodies. And Don Shan, did you meet him out there?
No, we didn't meet him.
Well, there weren't too many there anyway, as far as that goes. I was surprised the last, in other words, when Gene was in the living way, I didn't feel I should be away holiday like that, and I stayed. And but there's no reason to keep me here now, and I'll attend other meetings, don't you know? But Don Shan was stationed in at the hospital too, but his job it wasn't mine at all, hardly goes. But he'd often come through and he'd say, "Listen, come on, Sergeant, help me." But he had to get a body ready for a burial, see. And there's a little building between the Red Cross Hospital, American Soldiers, and the convalescent, a small building. And then when the bodies come back from either from the railroad front or the river front, when they're put in there, and of course, I good many times I helped Don put bodies in boxes. I can think back now of how we could have made it much easier. In other words, some of those boys that came back, two or three of them had their helmets on yet, and froze right on there too. And we put them in a box, helmet and all, the only thing you could do, see? Mm-hmm. And some of them, their limbs would be spread, and you'd do your best to push them together enough to get them in the box and put the cover on, four or five screws. And about that time, a slave, Russian slave, a pony pulling, and a few members from the American band would pull up and start a little music and put the American flag over the box, and there they off they were, see. I hate to tell this, this would have it, wouldn't it? I attended the memorial service in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the service was, General Ironside from English spoke and so on and so forth. He just much as said that the Yanks had failed, the English were going out to take over, you know, additional English, so on and so forth. But the part that hurt me was to see those, you see, in Russia, September is a rainy month.
Mm-hmm.
And October on, you get some snow every day. And by the time spring comes, May or June, there's an awful lot of it, see. And this particular lot where they buried these boys, well, in Archangel, the sewerage was very poor.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, there was water standing all over that property, you know, where those bodies, where the boys had been buried, see. And stand there and listen to that service and look at that. Think of, you know, American boys gone out there to fight and then body used that way, don't you know?
Mm-hmm.
But of course, most of those are now at Whitechapel, see. They were brought back,
yeah.
See. And, but it was, I might add this, that when I came out of the Army, my, Jean, my wife, now, ex-wife, she said to me, you know, she said, Mike, you're entirely different than when you went in the service. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, she said, I don't know, but you are. I said, Jean, if the service wouldn't change, then nothing would. And, you know, because you got to watch out for yourself in the Army, see. You never know what's going to happen. You better be right on the alert. And I was, too. But some of the things I was asked to do, it's bound to change you. In other words, I grew up in a home with my mother and my father and brother and three sisters, don't you know? And we were just one, you might say. And then to see the other side of life.
Mm. You said that General Ironside said that
Hmm?
You said that General Ironside said the American soldiers had failed.
Well, he, I might.
He had so many words?
The English were my idea, or of that type, see. I kept pretty well. I was in Birmingham in 1914 when the papers came out and said that the Germans, you know, had been attacking and so on and so forth. And from that time on, I kept pretty well posted. My personal opinion, I don't think the English were the fighters that the French and Germans were, or, you know, and the Belgians were, and so on and so forth. See, I had some nice things done for me by English. I was, they called it a hospital, but just a building, you might call it, up at the front. And I was carried in there on a litter, and I think it was on the third floor. But anyway, I was there several days before I brought back to Archangel. And it was an English hospital, it was supposed to be.
Was this when you had double pneumonia?
Ma'am?
Was this when you had double pneumonia?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this English sergeant came up and talked to me a couple of times, and he said, "Listen, Sergeant," he said, "several boys have gone," and he said, in other words, different members of the companies would go out and try to get a few eggs from the peasants and so on and bring them to, and I had three or four eggs along there, and he said, "Here's three or four more," he said, "the boys are gone, and they're American," so he said, "I feel you're entitled to them," and he said, "You need them." And later, when I got back to Arden, in other words, at the hospital, that same sergeant came in there as a convalescent. And he said, "I don't know why I'm here," because he said, "I'm an Englishman." I said, "I don't either. But I said, I have nothing to do with that. But I said, let me tell you something. When you're here, I'll take care of you."
Yeah.
And I did just that for him, too.
Getting back to Ironsides, though, why do you think he said that the Americans had failed?
Why?
Why do you think that Ironside said that the Americans had failed? Why would he say such a thing?
Failed?
Yes.
Well, all in a nutshell, we're too outnumbered.
Mm-hmm.
As I have been told, in the beginning, they intended to send a division of Americans to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
But they cut it down to a regiment, see, and been quite different. It had been 70,000 to 80,000 men sent out there, don't you know, than...
Yeah.
It was a terrible expedition. It really, I don't know, but I've been told from different sources that it's never been written into American history. Well, maybe, I hope it has, but... I wouldn't blame them if they didn't, because I think it really somewhat was disgraceful on the part of the American government, see, to send just a handful of men out there.
You think they should have sent more men, or they shouldn't have sent any?
And a better equipment, see. We didn't have any artillery, see, just infantry. And any war that's fought is usually... Well, like artillery, they kind of use the artillery to kind of, well, break down the other, don't you know, for a while, and then the infantry goes ahead. I've got a very good friend over here, Gerald Amy. He was in the Second World War, and he was an engineer, and he likes to talk to me and so on. And he said, "You know," he said, "you can be thankful you were in the infantry." I said, "I guess you're right." In other words, the engineers go ahead. See, if the bridge has to be repaired, why, they have to repair it. See, and even under heavy fire, don't you know?
Yeah.
Well, maybe I should look.
Well, when did you land at Archangel?
Hmm?
When did you land?
We landed there. I went in the service on the 5th of September at Custer, and we landed in the harbor on the 5th of December, only a year later.
Your anniversary. Year later. Hmm? Your anniversary, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why we were out there, anchored out there for a day or two before we came into the docks. I don't know why, but they were.
Did you go down with Company D?
Did I what?
Go up the Dwina River with Company D after
yes.
You landed?
You see, when we arrived in Russia, one battalion, about four companies, went up the river.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went up on scows. They were pulled by some kind of a boat. But anyway, there was about 500 boys on each one of these scows. See, there were two boats. But the railroad, another battalion, they went up on railroad. See, but the railroad boys, they always said, weren't as far north or south or away from Archangel, might say, the base, as the river boys were. And I was, of course, in the river, 1st Battalion.
What did you do when you went down the river?
Down the river? You mean
up?
Huh?
It was up the river.
Yeah.
Up
yeah.
The river. Yeah, you went south up
yeah.
The river.
Yeah.
So
what did we do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were only on the boat for 2 or 3 days. I think we got on a Sunday, if I remember rightly. And I think we got off the boat the next Thursday morning, if I remember. I mean the scow. Now, on the riverfront, the first company of the battalion would kind of scour the small town, so on and so forth, and try to find if there was any Bolsheviks playing around there. And the other three companies would march on, see, and because there were only just little villages, that's all it was, away from Archangel. Archangel was a nice town, but otherwise it was maybe 20 or 30 out or something like that, don't you know what I mean, small groups.
Were you with Company D when you fought at Selzo?
The north? The what?
Do you remember fighting with Company D at Selzo?
No.
When did you first fight the Bolsheviks?
Well, I suppose it was up around Shankhurst. I suppose it was about 2 weeks after that.
Mm-hmm.
We had driven a good wedge into the Bolsheviks, but then they counterattacked it. Got a lot of Yanks then too.
How long were you on the riverfront before you were taken ill?
Not very long. Maybe a month, something of that kind. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
When you got double pneumonia, had you ever had Spanish flu?
No.
You just got the double pneumonia.
Double pneumonia. So in other words, I was examined by the Allied Board.
Mm-hmm.
And Captain Greenleaf said, double pneumonia, I don't know. But anyway, I asked the Lord humbly when I went aboard the boat going over that someday I might return. And though I had a very, very close call, I did return. And since I've been out of the service, two little things, hearing's a little not quite up to standard, but it's not bad. I've enjoyed wonderful health.
How long were you ill with double pneumonia?
Well, I came back to Archangel on a hospital boat, And I went to up into an English hospital, a 53rd hospital. But I think it probably was maybe a hard patient to handle, I don't know. But every time I'd see English doctors on the floor, I'd ask them when I was going to be discharged, see. And I was only in that hospital maybe a week or two. And I guess they were glad to send me down to headquarters company. Because there were so many things about 56. Of course, I realized that not possible to have everything when you only, in a short time, don't you know what I mean, to get it organized right. But
what was it like?
The hospital?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the cots weren't bad, and the building, it was a pretty good building, but the food was terrible. And for illustration, if you wanted a piece of bread for lunch, you better get it in the morning. Tuck it underneath your pillow if you want to have a piece of bread to eat with your lunch, because they just didn't serve any bread with it, and things like that, you know. I wasn't used to that, see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not fussy about eating. Gino said, whatever's put in front of me, I ate, and I guess I do, it did. But I think there should be a little bit of, in a way, of some kind of a system, don't you know? And the English didn't seem to have that. Maybe it's because they were short of help, or I don't know, things that kind.
What happened after you were discharged from the 53rd Stationary Hospital?
Well, I went to headquarters company, and the next morning I...
Was that an Archangel?
Mm-hmm. At the other end of the town. But anyway, and the next morning, I was transferred to the Convalescent Hospital. In other words, I was examined again there, and they transferred me to Convalescent Hospital. And that's when I came under Captain Greenleaf.
Why did the British send you to headquarters?
In Archangel?
Yeah, why did the British send you away from their hospital?
Well, I rather think it was my own fault, probably, because I was fed up on it, the way they handled it, see. And I wanted to get out of there.
Did you request to be put into an American?
Oh, yes. I asked as soon as I said, I know I'll be better off if I get down to headquarters company.
American. And were you?
Yes, I was.
How did the food in the convalescent hospital compare to the food in the British hospital?
Well, it wasn't much when I went in there.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Greenleaf talked to me, but he said, I said, well, Captain Greenleaf, I said, I wouldn't exchange one thing unless I had a letter from you authorizing me to do it. Because I said, you know the British, you know the American, the Army. And so he wrote me, a letter, and it was right to the letter, too. I wish I'd have kept it, but I destroyed it, allowing me to trade as I saw fit, see. With the peasants.
So that's where you started working?
Yeah.
With Captain Greenleaf?
Yeah. And he was very fair with me, because every time any convalescent was leaving Russia, he always told me when they were leaving, about every 3 weeks or so on, they'd send bird boys back. You see, we sent a lot of them back, but we had quite a few troops from France and some come out there, in other words, replacement troops, see, to bring up the army, or then mm-hmm. the regiment up to standard again.
What were your first impressions of Archangel?
Well, it's entirely a different city than ours is. In the first place, the sewage system is terrible, was then, in Russia, see. And and then, of course, I was told while I was out there that a lot of, especially young people, had left southern Russia and In other words, they sent the younger people to northern Russia, feeling that they were protected more there than around southern port. And as a result, by there was probably, Archangel was supposed to be about 60,000. They may have been 100,000 there, don't you know? And it was awfully overcrowded, see. You'd go to come home and the Russian people, they don't think of their young people like the Yanks do. A lot of them slept on practically a straw tick or something like that, and on the floor, don't you know, in the bedroom and so on. They lived different.
What did you know about the political situation there?
Only all I knew is they had overthrown the Tsar, you know what I mean, and so on, and they hadn't any stable government, though they said the ruble was worth a dime, I don't think it was worth much, because on account of the government being overthrown.
Did you know that there had been a revolution there the very night before you landed?
Mm-hmm. And that's why I often wondered why when your troops were sent out there. But they said at the time that Russians had furnished troops to, in other words, to some of the other countries, so that they thought there were more rights that should be Yanks sent out. I don't know. I would say it was that expedition was really a disgrace to the American government, you know what I mean, see.
You said before that you got to know the Archangel residents, some of them pretty well.
Yeah.
What do you think about their position in the Civil War? Did they sympathize with the British and your side of it, or did they sympathize at all with the Kremlin, the Bolsheviks?
To be honest, truthfully, Bob, the ones that I knew very well, they were very close-mouthed, because they felt something might leak out, you know what I mean, and something would happen to them, don't you know? It was awful to live a life like that.
When did you find out that the armistice had been signed?
Oh, we found out that, but of course that's about the time our fighting started.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think they had a kind of a board up and bulletin board. I think they went to the headquarters, and I know there was one at the convalescent, and kept telling how things were going over in France and so on. Small, and different one to go up there at that and read them and so on. But they, we thought that after the armistice was signed, why, shortly we'd be getting out of there. But that wasn't it. Most of the fighting was after the armistice mm-hmm. was signed. And we were there till the next June, I think about the 14th and 16th of June of the next year, fighting all winter.
What do you think was the effect on the morale of the men after they had heard that the war in the West was over?
Well, they were wondering when they were coming home. Yeah, they were. That was right. That's all they were thinking about. But I don't know. The American government didn't agree on that for some reason.
Okay. What was the quality of the medical care in the hospital when you were in there? What was the quality of the medical care in the hospital?
Very good.
Very good.
American. Very good. We only had two American nurses at the Red Cross Hospital,
mm-hmm.
but those two ladies were excellent. Yeah.
Were they assisted by Russian women at all?
Oh, they had Russian help there, but they were...
Okay, you were talking about Major Longley?
Major Longley. Yeah, medical captain, medical major. I never met, in other words, I often wonder, but for some reason, they sent the 339th regiment out there, but they sent the 327th ambulance corps out there, medical.
Mm-hmm.
And the 310th, what would it be? Well,
engineer.
Major Longley was at the head of it, and he was in charge. He was over at the Red Cross Hospital. And Reed and I got pretty well acquainted with Major Longley. He talked to me one time. He said, "I can't figure out, Sergeant, how you're improving that food so well." And I said, "Well, I couldn't do it." I said, "If I didn't have the help, and if I didn't have the make the exchanges and so on with the peasants and so on." Then he said, "You know," he said, "do you have any extra time?" And I said, "What do you mean, Major?" He said, "Oh," he said, "we've got some surplus over there," and he said, "I thought maybe we'd send them over. Maybe you could get rid of them for us." And I did. The Red Cross had a place of business or a building in Archangel, and I think his name is Major Lively in charge of it. And if I dropped in there, well, he'd always come down and talk to me, and from the office, and he asked me if I was short of this for illustration, canned milk. And I said, "Well, we're not short, Major, but we can always use a little extra." He said, "Oh, you can have it." And he was very nice to me. I let one cook go up there because he took things from the stock room.
Mm.
And
was he American?
Mm-hmm, American cook. I guess he came back to the States. I don't know what happened to him. I've always tried to be honest, see? And I just can't work with anybody unless they are that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, were there adequate food supplies in the hospital and medical supplies, would you say?
Oh, yeah. They were pretty well taken care of. Mm-hmm.
Much more so than the British?
Hmm?
Much more so than the British?
Yeah.
Okay.
What about the number of doctors?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they only had two or three doctors out there.
Total?
Or I don't know how many, but there weren't too many. But they were willing to work.
So you never witnessed any cases where the doctors neglected the patients?
No.
Stole supplies or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Let's see. Would you tell us about your clothing that you wore on the front?
The what?
The clothing you wore on the front.
The clothing?
Yeah.
Well, we were well clothed, I think, about as much as anyone could wear. But the temperature was so that it would get through. I can remember when I'd go over to make an exchange, maybe in an evening. I'm dressed warm and so on and so forth, but I hadn't. We'd only get a short distance, maybe a block or two, and in other words, those heavy coats were sheep lined, and you'd start to hear that darn stuff crack, see? You know? You think we had a cold winter here last one? Oh, no.
It wasn't anything, huh? Okay. Was frostbite very common?
Hmm?
Was frostbite common?
Was what?
Was frostbite common?
Oh, frostbite? Oh, very much. Well, quite a few came into the convalescent hospital with frostbite, but some of them were pretty severe.
Mm-hmm. Were they the severe cases? Were they usually had lost their coat or something, or their mittens?
Well, no, I don't know. They those Russians, they, I don't know, either our equipment wasn't right, the right equipment for the for that severe cold or something. I don't know, but frostbites were pretty common up there. Troops.
Okay. What were the sanitary conditions at the hospital like?
What is the what?
The sanitary conditions.
Well, the Red Cross Hospital was much better than the newer building, and but when we in the convalescent hospital, it was a very suitable building for convalescent. So I think, I mean, in that part of the country, but the for illustration, they had no way of heating water at the convalescent hospital when I went there. See. And the American engineers installed a heating system so that to have hot water and so on.
Mm. How many buildings had modern plumbing?
How many what?
Buildings. Which buildings had modern plumbing?
Oh, I think the Red Cross was better off, better than the convalescent was as a whole.
How about the British Hospital?
How what?
How about the British Hospital?
That was a very good building, too, for that. Sanitary.
Were the buildings well heated and well ventilated?
Well, no, not too well heated. But the Russian people don't believe in much heat between you and I. In Archangel there, I often went to a building in the evening, and I sometimes never didn't even take off my. And I knew them well; I'm very well acquainted with them. But I just probably leave my overcoat on because it wasn't warm in there. Mm. Was you warming up here today? Is it warm enough? Yeah. Comfortable here today?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine.
I turned up the heat this morning a little, and then I turned it back.
It's pretty nice outside today. It's a nice day. How about the hospital building? Was that well heated, where the patients were?
Well, the convalescent wasn't. In other words, in Russia, they're most all brick. And they build them in the corner like that, and then they put wood about in there, and when they think they got the brick kind of warm, why, they pull that fire out, see, and let it drop down in underneath. And the Yanks, they overfired them sometimes, and then they start the tubophores smoking in the walls, you know, and then the fire department come, but it wasn't much. It only come probably with a barrel of water or something of that kind. It was enough to put the darn thing out, but they'd have to tear part of it out of there so that they could. But they, when I heard there was a fire in the building, I used to get up. But but they were so got to be quite common. In other words, it's a convalescent hospital. We kept a Russian all the time, and that's about all they did is rebuild those in different rooms, you know, where they where they'd gotten too hot and burnt the tube before.
That was in the hospital that happened.
Yeah.
Were the patients, were they usually pretty comfortable?
Well, we just stayed there, and they'd pull the brick out and dump a little bit of few pails of water or something on it, and that was it.
Okay. When you stayed in, or you had Russian friends and everything, how do you think the Russians as a whole reacted to the American troops?
Very good. I rather enjoyed going to several homes. As an illustration, at Easter time, the Russians, they go about, you know, they do as well as they can in the way of food or on a table, but they leave it, and you can go there and enjoy whatever they've got there, and then move to another home. And this particular family wanted me to go with them on an Easter morning, see, and I did. And no, we didn't see any of the people usually that lived there, because they were at some other home, don't you know? Mm-hmm. But they made you at home, and I got quite a kick out of that morning going there. It's quite different than back here, don't you know? If you invite someone in, well, you'd want to be there to meet them, don't you know? But that they weren't there. See? But I rather like the Russian people. I got along with them fine, and I guess they saw something of me, too. I don't know.
Did they like most of the American soldiers?
They what?
Did they like most of the American soldiers?
Oh, yes.
Got along really well,
yes.
Huh?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Did that change while you were in Archangel at all? Did they start feeling resentful or...
Did they what?
Did their feelings toward the American soldiers change? Did they become less friendly while you were there or anything?
Oh, I would think so, as a whole. Mm-hmm. They used to have things to entertain the convalescents, and they'd have dances at the convalescent and so on and so forth. And of course, Russian girls came, see, and there was always plenty of young people there to satisfy the patients that wanted to dance, see. I always liked to dance, see, and I'd always go out there was one boy that played in the American band, and he played the piano, and he was always had to play, and he was keeping company with this Russian girl pretty steady, and he asked me, he said, "Sergeant, will you dance with her?" I said, "Sure, I'll dance with her." And he said, "You'll find she's a good dancer." I said, "That's fine." I said, "I like to dance. If I'm going to dance, I like to dance with someone. I'm going to walk all over, maybe." Yeah.
Okay. Did you notice any difference between the way the peasants looked upon the Americans and the way they looked upon, say, the British or the French or the Canadians?
Did you know any difference between the...
Did they like the other Allies as much as they liked the Americans?
I think the Yanks got along better with them.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. Yeah. I think so. I think that the Yanks fitted in pretty well.
Was there ever any hostilities between the British and the Russians, for instance?
British
and the Russians? Were there any hostilities between them?
Well, I don't know.
Well, getting back to the hospital, how long did the patients get to convalesce?
Well, they, of course, to convalesce?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, they were examined every so often, see. And of course, if they were stronger, well, many times they were sent back to the front, don't you know? And some of them that did not, well, they're permanently on a convalescent list, and they were sent home.
Did you ever hear of any cases when the patients were sent back to the front but were still pretty sick?
No, I did not, because, they were spread all over and they came back, don't you know, and went here and there and so on. You see that being out to Custer about 10 months and more like a depot brigade than... We didn't keep our same boys, you know what I mean? We originally had. We might get 180, 200 boys signed to a company, and maybe in 3 or 4 weeks they were transferred out, see, to some other division that was going overseas, see? In other words, Deep Custer was like a depot brigade for almost all the time that I was there. And, as a result, a lot of boys, that even in our own company, were only with us 2 or 3 weeks before we went overseas, see? And they were very poorly trained, I mean, the late troops had it, and when they got out of the service, they went here and there to their home. You didn't hear much of them after that. The 339th, they said, had quite a few of the troops were from Michigan, of course, and Wisconsin. And we had quite a lot of troops right in our own company that was from the South. Basically transferred from here, from Camp Taylor to Custer, you know, and then transferred, either went with us or were transferred to some other company to go overseas. Custer was just, you could see trains going out and in all the time with troops on them, see, going to other places.
Kept moving everybody, shifting them around a lot, huh?
Yeah.
What did you hear about conditions on the front and about where everybody was? Were you kept pretty well informed?
About the troops?
Yeah, about where everybody was.
Yes, of course, what we were anxious to hear is how they were getting along up there, don't you know what I mean? The American ration at the front was terrible. It's just that old iron ration, corned beef and hardtack and so on. And many boys told me that during the cold weather they'd put the hardtack in a sleeping bag at night so they didn't put some snow in their kit with the hardtack, so it'd be a little bit soft in the morning to eat, don't you know? Yeah.
How did you feel about being in Russia fighting the Bolsheviks, about the Americans fighting the Bolsheviks?
Well, that's the only thing about the Allies. I don't know. I don't ever understand why the Yanks were ever sent out there.
Did you feel at the time that you were helping the Russians, or did you just not know if you were or not?
Well, I don't see how any way we were helping them. Russian people can get along on a lot less than the Yanks can. The Yanks have been used to more, don't you know what I mean? And
get by with the Russians could get by with less.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. I never, of course, there was no, we got meat from the quartermaster and so on, but I often wondered in Northern Russia, in other words, in Archangel, when we first went there, there wasn't a store in Archangel except that jewelry store. Now, there had been, but they'd all gone. I mean, they closed up and gone home or somewhere. There was quite a few more business places when we left there than there was when we first went out there. A lot of things, they had no streetcars running when we first went to Archangel. American engineers got to a lot of those streetcars back on running again, don't you know, and things like that. But they don't have the transportation, nothing compared to what we have back here to work with.
How did the people in Archangel feel about the engineers helping with the streetcars?
Well, they were grateful for that.
They were grateful?
Like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It may have been that, we were able to get some parts out there or something that they could work with to repair those cars. I don't know, but they, They were just laying idle, that's all, until American engineers got them running again. A lot of them, maybe not all, but a lot of them.
What did you think that the British direction of the expedition, how did that affect the troops and their morale? What was the effect of that?
British expedition?
The British directing the expedition.
Well, I don't think the British got along with the Russians at all, myself. I had talked to Russians and asked them what they... They seemed to be perfectly satisfied to have the anchor on, but I guess they'd like to have seen the British get out. I don't know. Yeah.
What kind of Bolshevik propaganda did you encounter?
What kind of
propaganda?
Not too much.
Not too much? How about the British? Did they use any propaganda?
I wouldn't say so.
What about prisoners?
Oh, you mean the Russian or any our prisoners or?
Okay. How about the Bolshevik prisoners? What kind of treatment did they receive?
Terrible. The Russian had a Russian prison right in Archangel there, and I saw several convoys of. It looked like the poor bird should have been in a hospital. Instead of that, they're trying to drive a sleigh, maybe two or three other prisoners in the sleigh with them, and convoy, and of course there's Russians going along on Russian horses, convoying them down, see, and they'd take them to that Russian prison. That was a terrible place. We used to get a detail from the Russian prison every day. They cut wood and so on for us and so on. And
so they were Bolshevik prisoners that worked for you?
No, they were, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, did you ever talk to them?
Well, they didn't speak much English, don't you know? There was one man in particular. He was a prisoner, but he spoke English. But he told me that, in the course of the conversation, that he had sailed a lot between Russia and England, and he'd been with men that did speak English, and he picked up a lot, see. I talked to him several times. In other words, he often, when he detailed to the hospital, the convalescent, in other words, they cut the wood right in the same yard where the convalescent hospital was.
Mm-hmm.
And he liked to get on the detail to carry wood in to the kitchen. He'd bring a lot of wood in there. And they carried it on their back, you know, a kind of an outfit they'd hooked over their shoulders, and they'd have this wood, and they'd walk out, and then there'd be, they had two or three prisoners there putting this wood on these outfits, and they'd just carry them in. And this particular boy, he said, I'll come all as often as I can in here. And of course, the cooks and I had given him something, don't you know. He was a likable fellow, too.
How well did, were the British in charge of those prisons that he was in?
Were the British troops got what?
Were the British in charge of those prisons?
No, the Russians somehow were in charge of that Russian prison. They may have been British over there too.
How well did they feed him?
Oh, terrible. This boy that used to bring him over, name should come to me. Schroeder was his name. And I said, Schroeder, I said, listen, they used to want to send something with them, see? And I said, Schroeder, I said, look in the bag before you bring them. And I said, if it's old fish or anything like that, just leave it. Don't bring it. I said, we'll feed them. And I think that's one reason why they like the convalescent, because they got a better meal, don't you know? Mm. Yeah.
Did he ever talk to you about Bolshevism or socialism?
Schroeder?
The Bolshevik prisoners that chopped wood for you.
Oh, no, they, as I say, of course they didn't have much time because they were there just carrying wood or doing this and that, don't you know?
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, they, in as much as a lot of them couldn't speak English, you couldn't talk to them either. Mm-hmm.
Were any of the prisoners ever physically abused?
Mm-hmm.
Were any of the prisoners ever physically abused? Were they ever beaten or shot or anything like that, you know?
Well, very seldom. Schroeder was a Teddy Schroeder told me one time, talking to me, that before he went in the army, why he trained animals, you know, and so on and so forth. In other words, he was the right kind of the right type to handle men of that kind, because he had patience with them, don't you know?
Was mm-hmm. Schroeder American?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think probably that's the reason why he was selected for that job, because what he had done in civilian life.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever receive any letters from home mentioning the expedition, that they had read newspapers about it here while you were over there?
Received letters from my home?
Yeah, like, you know, your girlfriend or your sister or somebody.
Well, the trouble is that in the Army you can't write much,
because
they'll blot it out on you. The government will, or something of that kind, don't you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you can about, in fact, to be honest with you, I sent quite a lot of cablegrams home.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't smoke, see, never have. And I could do my 40 cigarettes, I could get 40 rubles. And I could go down and send a cablegram out. If you told them you're well and this and that, that's about all you can tell them anyway, don't you know? And they appreciated those cablegrams, and I think much more than a letter, because a letter took 3 weeks to get it back here.
Mm-hmm.
And that cablegram, they'd have it within a day or two after you sent it. And that's the trouble with the Army. Things you'd like to write, but you didn't dare write because they'd be blotted out.
What happened if you wrote a letter and they didn't like it? Would they reprimand you? Would they, you know, call you to account for what you had written?
Oh, no, they just blot it out. Just blot out what they didn't want you to have, or come back home. And that's all you'd hear of it. But Jean often said that she thinks only once or twice that there were little things in my letters that had been blotted out.
What kind of stuff did they censor?
Anything that they didn't want to get out about the government.
Was it just about the government, or also about conditions in?
No, government mostly.
If you wrote home something like, I don't know why we're here, or was that type of stuff? That
yeah.
Okay. Did you ever get any letters from over here, though, that from the States, saying that they had read in the newspapers about the expedition?
No.
Nothing like that? Did anybody know what was going on in the States?
Did they know what's going on in the States here?
Yeah, did they know? Really?
Oh, they probably did. They probably, from newspaper and so on at that time.
But when they wrote, they never referred to the newspaper articles they read?
No.
Okay. Did you ever have any dealings with the Red Cross organization besides the hospital?
Well, the Red Cross, that's where I used to get extra supplies from.
Uh-huh.
Major Lyman, a fine, fine out man. And he would, if I went in there, he'd do his best to give me as much as he could, what he could spare. I remember one time he said to me, he said, Sergeant, he said, what if you got some honey? What would you do with that? I said, well, I think we'd make biscuits. and serve them. I said, goes along not too bad. So he let me have, I think it was almost gallon cans of honey. And I opened one of them, and I think we went through it about one meal because we were feeding. To be honest, when I went into the convalescent hospital, they were only feeding about 60 patients there then. And Captain Greenleaf said, you know, he said, it keeps increasing. He said, how are you going to handle them, Sergeant? I said, that's my job, Captain. Leave it with me. Now, out at Custer, we had 3 U.S. Rangers to work with. And up in Russia, I had just 1 stove, see. But inasmuch as we only were feeding about 60 in the beginning and then gradually come up, see, you seem to take them on, that few extra, and didn't seem to be too hard for you to handle, don't you know? Mm-hmm. Even with the 1 stove, see. But you had to plan pretty well.
Who had control over the supplies?
The British. Yeah, we drew rations from the British, and
were they very generous?
No, they were tricky.
So you had to be smart to outwit them.
Well, there was a little sergeant from the ambulance company that drew the rations, and of course I knew exactly what should be coming in. I mean, in the way of quantities, mm-hmm. And I told him in plain English that I realize from time to time it probably might be short of this or that, but I said, be sure to pick up a memo or something from them that they haven't delivered that much, see? And then they got it in, we got ours. Oh, the British are good. Oh. Coming back, I didn't want to, but on the boat coming back to France, there was an American officer came in one day, and he said, Sergeant, he said, would you take charge of the galleys coming home? In other words, the Americans just about refused to go aboard the boat unless the Americans were in charge of the galleys, see? Because we it was terrible going out to Russia, terrible. The British were in charge, and there was 14 men that sat at a table, and like for a vegetable, like cabbage. I think any 4 or 5 Yanks could have eaten all if they sent up for 14, see, to eat for a vegetable. And so the Yanks wouldn't go aboard the boat. Well, I did take over the galley, but I did tell him, I said, I've been working hard out here. I said, I don't know why I should do that. And he said, you don't have to. But he said, that's why we want you, because he said, what you've done out here. I said, well, let's put it this way. You say there's 2 galleys on the boat. I said, one in the rear and one in the bow. And I said, all right. I said, there's a company from A Company, Sergeant, or Collar. And I said, if I may have him in the front or rear galley, why, I said, I'll look after the other one. But I didn't have to worry too much about it, because I knew while I was out to Custer, I used to visit the other kitchens a lot, and I knew the help, the good help, and the
you had your man picked out.
Oh, yeah.
When you were at the hospital, you fed the patients. You cooked for the patients?
Cooked for them?
The patients at the hospitals? Is that who you cooked for?
Yes, the convalescents.
Did you ever cook for our officers?
No.
Or British, just the patients. How did the monotony of the food affect them? Or did you make it so it wasn't so monotonous?
Well, they did everything they could, but of course it was.
They still grumble?
Oh, yes. They were wondering why we weren't coming home, you know, and so on and so forth. The trouble is, troops laying around like that, they have nothing to do, you know, only to, might say, think, don't you know what I mean? And they get all knotted up and wanting to get out of there. but we didn't get out till the next June.
The American Sentinel, was that paper censored too? Was the American Sentinel, was that ever censored? Did
American Sentinel?
Yeah,
paper.
What was printed in it, the paper?
Stars and Stripes, you mean?
No,
this
Sentinel.
Paper.
Stars
no,
and
we
Stripes.
Never saw that. We did. I did see a couple times Stars and Stripes out there. Some soldier must have had it sent out there to him. And after he had read it, he'd lay it around, and I'd pick it up and read it, so on and so forth. I take 3 Army papers now.
You didn't see that while you were over there?
No, I don't remember seeing it at all.
Where did you get it? Where did you get it?
The Stars and Stripes?
No, the American Sentinel.
Where did you get these?
Yeah.
They were printed out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Were they censored? Could they only print certain things?
I don't think they were ever censored. This Sergeant Knight, he printed them, see?
Mm-hmm.
And he dropped one off at the convalescence every week, see?
So the British didn't have any control over this
no,
paper?
It's no.
None at all? Okay.
I think, now, Stevie, the little boy came here today, you know, he told me that his teacher in history at Principia, he said the teacher got an awful lot from these. He must have read them pretty well, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, how did you spend holidays in Russia, like Thanksgiving and Christmas?
Christmas, they did pretty well. They didn't have much to work with, but by George, they'd trim a tree some way, somehow. And
plenty of trees around.
Thanksgiving, of course, you didn't. As a comparison, I had boys tell me at Custer that they thought they had enjoyed the dinner and so on, so more just as much as had they been home. See, but not so out in Russia because you didn't have the things to work with.
How did the British soldiers and the American soldiers get along?
Well, I don't think they were too friendly.
Uh-huh.
Exceptions to it, but I mean as a whole. I knew several British boys out there, but as a whole, I don't think they got along very well.
Did you have many conflicts with the British? Did you have many conflicts with the British?
Oh, from time to time, and meet them here or there and talk to them a few minutes, so on and so forth. I used to go down at the market in Archangel. In other words, the Russians, especially the ladies, they'd come from somewhere and they'd have a whole sleigh load of fish, see? Different fish. Good fish, too, and large. Fish seem to be much larger up there than, I mean, for illustration, like a perch. Perch here is small. Up there, my George, some of the perch was large as our pickerel here, in this, you know, in this river. And, but I often picked up, made an exchange down there for some fish and so on, and for something we had at the hospital.
Yeah. Since the British and the Americans didn't get along very well, what kind of, was there ever any violence between them or
oh
anything?
No, I wouldn't say that, but they just kept away from each other, that's all.
So they never had
no.
any real outbreaks?
You know, I won't go too far, but of course the French had been in the war a long time and over there long before we got in. But the French were disgraceful out in Russia, especially with female sex, don't you know, and so on and so forth. I never thought anyone would get as low as they did, but they did.
You mean they were kind of immoral?
Huh?
They were immoral?
Yes. especially the French. I didn't see so much with that of the British, but.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
How did you feel about the others, like the Canadians? How were they?
Hmm?
How did the soldiers feel about the Canadians?
Canadians are good soldiers, good nice boys too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think.
What opportunities for recreation did you have?
Not very much.
Mm-mm.
No,
mm.
There was very little.
Let me ask a question. The officers who remained in Archangel, the ones who never saw action at the front, particularly the British, did they have a really easy life up there in Archangel?
Well, I don't know.
Did they live pretty well?
Hmm?
Did they live pretty well, the British officers there?
British, two or three officers, I knew a couple of boys that worked in, or stationed as British officers. As a whole, I think it's the Yank likes to live and so on and eat and this and that much, much more than the British. I think they're, if they have their tea in a bun or something like that, they're all right.
Did they have a pretty easy life there, though?
Oh, yes. They don't like fighting.
They just sat back and took it easy?
They'll push the fighting off on some if they can.
When did you discover that you were going home? When did you first find out?
Well, it was early spring, but probably around Memorial Day, along in there, see? Maybe a little earlier than that.
How did you find out?
Well, just little things when they heard the British troops coming in to replace the Yanks, and so on, you put two and two together that, the Convalescent and the Red Cross Hospital were right on the bank of the Diviner River, and they could see any boats coming down, and so on, and they wanted the curiosity to kill the catch, they wanted to know who was coming in on them.
How did you feel about going home?
I wanted to come home.
Did you feel bad that the Americans were leaving without having really finished what they'd started?
No, because I think the Yanks would have completed all right if they had troops enough. But uh, 6,000 troops.
Just not enough?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Compared to what the job was to be done.
So then you went home, and when you got back here, what kind of a reception did you have?
Not very good either. We got off of the boat in Boston. We were stationed out at Camp Devens for a day or 2 days, I think, before we came on to Custer. And you see, the trouble was, in our country, most of the troops after the armistice probably had gotten back here and had been discharged, and so on and so forth. So they kind of forgot about the North Prussian boys, I guess. They again, at Camp Devens, the quartermaster issued they called iron ration, corned beef, and so on and so forth. And they had been eating that all winter up there in Russia. And you know what they did with them?
Mm.
They just broke, I think, every car window on the train, see? Just threw them right through the window, see?
You hear about that?
Hmm?
I didn't know that.
You know, they may have needed them for food, but they were disgusted to think of.
What did your family and friends, when you got back home, had they heard about your...
In my case, there was quite a few of my family that were down at the train.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a brother-in-law that was in the Spanish-American War, and he was right over when the train pulled in, and I think I was out on the kind of on the platform, and he spotted me. And he said, "Come on, Mike, we're all down here." I think everybody except my mother, of course, she has a stiff knee and couldn't mm-hmm. get around a place like that very easy. But otherwise, like my sisters and so on, different ones are all down there, and brother-in-laws, this and that. And this little, you know, a little honeybee that goes to Hope College, the Jane's daughter?
Jen.
Jen, yeah.
Yeah, I know her.
Well, she was there, and she was a little bit of a tot. And they had taught her to fight that Uncle Mike had been fighting Bolsheviks, see? And she repeated to him. Yeah.
And then when you told your friends and family what had happened, you know, stories about your past year, were they surprised?
To be honest with you, I think I've talked to you two girls more than I ever talked before to anybody, excuse me. I've never gone into too much into detail. Now, Chuck was here the other day, and Jane's husband sat here and talked to me a few minutes. And he said, I never realized what you were in up there until you girls wanted some information, so on and so forth. And he said, "You never talk much about it." I know I don't. I said, the way I look at it, I said, I sometimes think that people don't want to hear those kind of things, don't you know? But you've asked a question, and I tried my best to answer them, don't you know? It's quite different. But just to carry on a conversation about Russia, I don't do it. They might be interested, I don't know. If they want to ask, I'll tell them all I know.
Okay, what do you think, or did your experience over there affect you? You said before that was it your girlfriend then?
Yeah.
That she said you changed a lot.
Well, the Army, you've got to watch out for yourself a lot more mm-hmm. than you do in civilian life, and different ways. And of course, I had known Jane about a year before I went in the Army, and we had understood that I didn't think it was right to go in the Army, and possibly something might happen, and so on and so forth, and it'd be better probably we waited until later. And I was out just a short time, and I asked her if she would marry me, and we decided on a date, I think it was the same night, and see when we were to be married. Jane was a wonderful person, more ways than one. She was from a poor family. Jane told me that she worked at the gas company in Detroit, and that when she'd get her pay, she'd have to take it home and turn it over to her mother. And that's because her mother, they had three children, see, mm-hmm. and to get along on. Her father passed on when she was real young. I think she was only about 8 years old when she passed on.
So do you think that experience in Russia affected you a lot?
Well, it probably did for a while, anyway. Maybe some, you know, I hope it hasn't down through the years, because I grew up in a nice home, and not mm-hmm. not a rich home or anything like that, but we were very thoughtful about the remainder of the family, don't you know, and so on. And yeah.
Well, is there anything else that you would like to tell us about your stay over in Russia that we have forgotten to ask you?
Oh, I suppose a lot
Any
of things.
Any favorite stories?
I suppose a lot of things when you think of them, but it's been so long that a lot of it's kind of slipped from me, don't you know?
Mm-hmm.
And,
I think you told us a lot anyway.
Hmm?
I said, you've remembered a lot. You told us a lot as it is.
And we really appreciate you summing up all those memories
for us. I don't mind that. If anything comes up that you want to ask me, why you can drop me a line or come over and mind it. The only kind of milk we got was canned milk and goat's milk. And I didn't like goat's milk. In fact, there was one person she used to bring. She used to bring a kid pail of time. She also, in other words, the bread that we got from the British, it had very little material in it, such as shortening and so on, that would hold it together. Mm-hmm. And you'd break a lot of it when you were slicing it. And no matter how hard you tried, and I'd trade a lot of that. And this particular Russian, she would come with this darn goat's milk, and she, oh, Ladna, Ladna, she was happy to think she was getting that then. But I had to tell her through an interparagogic that I just couldn't use it, because if you could have baked with it or something of that kind, you could use it up that way, but you could taste it, see? Did you ever drink goat's milk?
No.
Is it strong taste?
Yeah, it's a different taste. I don't know. Well, anyway, as a result, I didn't use it, only for very little of it. And so I had to resort to canned milk and pet and carnation, mm-hmm. different milk. And I would thin it a little bit, or at least the cooks were, and I would. Well, I tried to make French toast. using it, and I didn't always get up too early for breakfast, because I'd be out evenings and so on, and I might sleep in a little while or stay in. But anyway, I knew they were going to French toast that morning, and I was going to be there. And I was in the kitchen, and there was a poor little fellow now. His body's buried in Arlington. Jimmy Idy, he was one of the cooks there when I went there, and I kept him on. He was a pretty good little boy, too. But anyway, I said, "How's things coming, Jimmy?" He said, "Looks all right, Sergeant." In other words, they had put a few pieces of bread dipped in egg and milk, and instead of acting as it should have, it started, the grease started to come up, see, toward the top of the pan. And wasn't but a second after that, and there was a flame on the stove, see. And the two cooks ran out, hollering fire in the building, which was all right. But I grabbed, there happened to be a couple of gunny sacks there, and I grabbed those gunny sacks, and I threw them over my arm, and I got a hold of this pan, and it got awful hot. I stayed with it until I got it to the edge of the stove, and when I could get a hold of the two handles, I gradually got it and put it down on the floor, see, and put out the flame on the stove. As Captain Greenleaf said, "I don't know what we'd have done if we'd lost this building." I said, "Well," I said, "that's true. It's partly my fault, Captain, I'll admit, but I said, I did want to see if we couldn't make French toast from time to time in the morning and help out with the breakfast, see? But I said, it didn't work out." But regular milk, you can do it fine, you know, see? But there's something in that canned milk, by adding a little bit of water, why it didn't work. Yeah.
You said that sometimes you would stay out evenings. What would you do during the evenings?
No, I'd go to Russian homes.
And barter?
Try to see if I could arrange something to make a barter, something of that kind. Or they would, you see, these two homes I went to. In other words, one of the homes was, Dr. Popov. Now he was in charge of the big Russian hospital there in Archangel, see, and his wife was an awful nice person to talk to, and so on and so forth. And then she had this one son that I'd talked to regarding a barter, see, making an exchange with, so on and so forth. And I remember one time I went over there and I said to Mrs. Popov, I said, "Mrs. Popov, what's that little building way in the back there?" She said, "Well, that's a little greenhouse." And she said, "But we haven't used it in 4 years. I said, why? She said, because we haven't any seed. And at that, prior to that, my different ones back home, they'd send me gum, but they'd unwrap it and paste it on the paper, you know, and wrap it up with a letter, see?
Mm-hmm.
So when she told me about this greenhouse, I didn't say anything, but I wrote home and I said, discontinue sending the gum for a while and send me some garden seed. And so I went over there one, a couple of packages of seeds, you know, Mr. Grace, or Sardin, we'll get the greenhouse heated up now. And it wasn't but, boom, 2 or 3 weeks, 2 months, they gave me a little bunch of lettuce seed, only they were small, but they had raised them in that, grown them in that little greenhouse, see? Mm. Yeah. Well.